everybody. I'm Juliana. I'm an addict. Oh, my heart is thumping. I was really nervous before I came, so I did what every wise addict should do when they walk into a strange room. I turned to the person next to me that I had never seen before, and I said, if I get scared, can I hold your hand? And she said, yes. And I guess that's the message, hey? You know, it makes me feel so good that I can come in here and be uncomfortable and completely comfortable at the same time. There's some of you I know and some of you I don't know, but I'm so glad to be here, and I'm so glad that I have this opportunity to tell you that Narcotics Anonymous was the best thing that ever happened to me. Truly, truly, truly. I was a very, very lonely person, you know? There's a part of me that before I ever did my fourth step, I would have told you that I wanted to hold hands and nobody would hold hands with me. Do you know that I really needed someone to help and there wasn't anybody there? But that hasn't turned out to be the truth. The truth is that I find it really scary to ask for help. I've always found it scary to ask for help. And I think part of that comes from the fact that when I was growing up, my mom was an addict. And it wasn't, but the story was that she had mental health issues, yeah? And that's why for 3 days at a time she would go into her room and close the door and we couldn't see her. And that was why sometimes she was happy and sometimes she was yelling and a lot of times she was hitting. I didn't know any of that. All I knew was that I was really scared and lonely, you know? And I'm not sure why it was that I never told anybody what was happening. I'm not sure how I came to believe that it's really better if you're near an addict, if you are an addict, or if addiction's an issue, that you should just, you know, keep it a secret. But, you know, I looked sad and unhappy pretty much from the get-go, and there were people who wanted to know if there was something they could do to help me when I was little, but I couldn't tell anyone the truth, so I couldn't open up to any kind of help. And that was pretty much a theme right the way to the time that I picked up. And I've seen, not long ago, I looked through some pictures of about the time I picked up, which was when I was 12. And I look like an animal with their leg in a trap, with just the most powerful pain in my eyes. And as somebody, you know, as the first speaker said, the first time I put a drug into my body, it was the first time that I felt myself relax, and I wasn't scared. And I thought I found a friend, you know, I thought I found a friend in drugs. And I definitely thought I found a friend in the other people I was hanging out with. You know, it just got so much easier for a little while, you know, because it helped me to check out. But my mother died of this disease when I was just about to turn 10 years old. She fell asleep on a bunch of barbiturates. She was smoking a cigarette, and she burnt the whole house down while my brother and I were locked in the basement playing so that we didn't wake her up. And it's, you know, it's something that I didn't talk about for a really long time because I was so ashamed and so grief-stricken. You know, that such a terrible thing had happened to me. But it was the end of a long bunch of terrible things that this illness brought into my life. So when my using got out of control, which was within 2 years, so, you know, by 14, I wasn't going to school anymore. I was taking drugs. I was dealing drugs and, you know, had basically run away from home. And my parents didn't know what to do with me, my father and my stepmother. They decided to send me to psychiatric care because they knew that I had what my mother had, but we were still not saying that it was called addiction. right? We were still, they were like, you've got it, you've got it. Well, okay, hand on heart, I do. And she had it, and, you know, my grandpa had it, my brother's in the rooms, I mean, you know. They said, you have an illness, you have this thing, and they put a name on it. And I remember thinking, well, I thought a couple things. First of all, I thought, you don't know what I have. And I also thought, I might have something, but I don't have this. But I was so busy making sure that nobody knew that I wasn't okay that I couldn't voice what might really have been happening for me, which is that I was an absolutely hopeless drug addict. I had, you know, squandered my education, my, you know, sacred physical body, my heart, everything. I was, you know, I just was robbed. Couldn't say a word of it. So I went for 2 years. From 15 to 17, I was in adolescent psychiatric care for a psychiatric problem that I didn't have. And there were kids who, you know, were on psychotropic medicine and couldn't have scissors, you know, who were seeing things and bouncing off the walls. I was checked in a room every 15 minutes. But you were allowed to have drugs there, okay? So me and the rest of the kids there, who were trapped there in this treatment, in this psychiatric facility, we used to go out and score. So, you know, I can remember bouncing off the walls on LSD in the psychiatric place. And, you know, people were just like, oh, yeah, she's mad, you know? Nobody ever, and it wasn't until later that I figured out that all these folks I was palling around with, we all had the same thing, you know? But there was no name for it. I don't know, maybe there was no name for it. Maybe it was early days. Insurance companies paid for your adolescent daughter to have psychiatric care, but they wouldn't pay for, I don't know what it was. Or whether it was just the denial and the perception that, you know, there's something we can't tell. You know, we don't talk about drugs. We don't talk about the fact that mummy broke into the surgery and took all the morphine and he had to blame it on the cleaner, right? Which was one of the stories my father told me much later, you know? So I got out of psychiatric treatment. Not one iota changed from the moment that I went in, you know, having used my heart's content while I was in there. But something really amazing happened to me when I went to university in my 20s. Which is I got turned on to spirituality. And it was, I don't know, there was this convergence for a little while of my drug use and my spirituality, so that I would like take a lot of drugs and I'd sit outside and the trees would go, we love you. The leaves would go, we love you, you're beautiful. And I would sit under that tree and I would be like, oh, yes, yes, I am, you know, and I love you too. And, you know, and then new drugs came along and we'd be out dancing and people would be like, oh, I love your skin. And I'd be like, I love your hair. And my heart was open and it was amazing, you know. But the thing is, I have a broken off switch. And I can't just take a little bit so that the trees are happy. I have to be like on day 5, shaking and sweating where the radiators are calling me names, right? So that... you can see where that went. But you know, this thing happened and it was really real. And I'm not going to go back and say, you know... tell you the whole sad story of my using without telling you that I also, there was a little bit of spirit came in. And it was like I could see the house I wanted to live in. I just couldn't find my keys, you know? I knew I loved the goddess, the god, whoever it was that was telling me they loved me, I loved them back. And I felt loved. And I made it through school. And I got a job, you know, got a job in a New Age publishing company, surrounded by all this magic. And I thought, this is going to be the thing that's going to hold my hand and make me stop feeling lonely. But, you know, it didn't, because I have a chronic inability to monitor my drug use. I will take enough drugs to make myself sick. I will lose every job, every partner, I mean, everything. It's, you know, why am I here? before coming to the Fellowship of NA, I could not manage my own life. I could not live and enjoy life as other people do. You know, I had to have something different, and I thought I found it in drugs. And then the rest goes too. You know, I was very up and down. You know, I'd have these rock bottoms, but I'd always get back onto it because I had, throughout the whole thing, I had a higher power. I swear, when things were bad and my mom was hitting us and things were bad and, you know, there wasn't any food, and when things were bad and, you know, I was in psychiatrist after psychiatrist after psychiatrist, I always, always, always believed I was going to get better. I always believed it was going to be okay. And it, I mean, God, if I didn't, where would I be? You know? What would have happened to me? I believed it. And had jobs got sacked, had partners left them, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I got married. I moved to London, and I was going to reinvent myself. Yeah, I was like a really beautiful middle-class yoga-doing hippie. It was all fine. I had these two little kids, drank a lot, but, you know, totally manageable. I'm an addict. Alcohol's not a problem, I thought. And then this, who I like to call my rock bottom, who lived across the street, said, "Oh, my God, I can see you. I know who you really are." And the relief that flooded into me that I didn't have to pretend to be this other person anymore. And he, you know, he offered me my drug of choice. And I ran away from home, from my kids, my two beautiful children, my beautiful husband. I don't know, I couldn't live like that. It wasn't true. I was in the middle of this family. I had these beautiful children and a beautiful husband. Everybody loved me. And I'll be darned if I wasn't lonely, you know? What's the deal? It was following me around. I was so lonely. They'd all be sitting on my lap and everybody would be petting me and hugging me and I would be alone. So I followed my rock bottom across the street and did phenomenal quantities of cocaine for days and days on end until I was just dirty and filthy. And how did my rock bottom come to be? I prayed. I lied in bed one night and I said, "God, please, you know, let me be of service." I still wanted to be of service. "Please, let me be of service. You know, what can I do? I'll do anything. I'll do anything." And this voice came from on high and it said, "All I need you to do is to stop taking drugs." And I was like, "What? Are you sure that's the only thing, you know? Because I could do a lot of other things, you know? I'm talented. I'm smart." So I thought, right, finally, God, you know, finally, you know, I've been spoken to, I've been called. My spirit's going to meld. 4 days. I managed 4 days. My husband went out of town. He left me with my children. And I don't know, maybe about 8 o'clock at night, it was time to go to bed. And I went to go get my children. My eyes are popping out of my head. I'm sweating. I'm green. I'm gray. I'm hacking. And I looked at my kids' faces. And they looked back to me, and I could see that I turned into my mother. You know, the one thing that ruined my entire life, you know, and my children looked at me with fear and they were lonely, do you know, because I wasn't even there. So I called somebody whose husband was in a different fellowship and she said, "Oh, you should try NA. It's very spiritual. You'll like that. You know, you're very spiritual." So I went to my first meeting. It was around Christmas time, so of course everybody was quite funked out, right? And everybody's freaking out because their family's coming and everything. And I sat through this whole meeting and I was like, "Yeah, I'm never coming here again. Ever, 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 you know, with this bunch of whingy people." So I was going to do it by myself. Okay, that time it was 6 days I managed. And, you know, still I wouldn't go back. I don't know why I wouldn't go back. I can only assume it was because I did not have the skill that I have now, which is learning to turn to the person next to you and say, "I am so scared. Will you hold my hand?" And for all my spirituality, and I am a cracking tarot card reader, I'll have you know, I never knew how to hold God's hand. It's like, you know, forgive the lingo. It's okay, you know, we can all, thank goodness, we all have the opportunity to have our own higher power here. But like, I thought that the problem was that God didn't love me enough, you know, like, because clearly, you know, the thing from my childhood was horrific, you know. I mean, if God loved me, wouldn't my mother have loved me back, and wouldn't I not have had to go to that, you know, da, 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 da. So I thought that there was a problem with my higher power, and that I had to just be like a better girl to get God to love me more, to help me more. And it took me a while, really, to figure out that the problem was me. But you know, that I was the one who didn't know how to hold hands. My big rallying cry at the end of my using with my husband was, I need to be met. Why won't you meet me? I had this fantasy that I could be met, you know. And I didn't know that I was the one who wasn't bringing it to the table. I was lonely because I, you know. So I went back to another meeting, and there was a girl there, and she said to me, oh, well, how have you been? You know, have you been going to meetings? And I said, no, it's been 3 weeks. And she said, oh, you should go more. Yeah, you'd feel better. And so, you know, I went in. I didn't want to go. I didn't want to be an addict. You know, I wanted to be a princess, a ballerina, a firefighter, Princess Diana. Oprah Winfrey was right up there on my list. And I never, never wanted to be an addict. And, you know, I said, I'm Julianne and I'm an addict because I needed to get clean. And I saw other people did it, and so I sat there. But man, it took me a long time to understand what that really meant, you know? And what it means for me is that I can't use drugs ever again, yeah? I can't use any, not alcohol, not anything, you know? Rescue Remedy without brandy is about it for me, you know? I can't use because... When I use, what happens is I lose the link between the things that support me and myself, and I return to a state of unbearable loneliness, and then I make myself crazy. And it's so sad. Well, how did I get to the point where I learned how to turn to the girl next to me and say, would you please hold my hand if I get scared? I owe it pretty much to the 12 steps. The meetings have been fantastic, and I've, you know, loved getting to become comfortable enough to sit here, you know, and I've loved learning how to listen and to speak. But the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous taught me how to live in the world so that I didn't have to be frightened, and it taught me what I had to do to get out of my own way so that I could feel connected and be happy to be alive. You know, so yeah, I'm an addict. That was very helpful when I finally understood that, because it meant that I could then come to believe that something could help me. And I always had a higher power. My first second step was the Magna Carta. I wrote like a spiritual opus. I'd been waiting for such a long time for somebody to ask me what my spiritual beliefs were. It was like, you know, the goddess, the trees, the unbearable, you know, the unbreakable, you know, Tao of creation. She said, yeah, that's good. Can you do this a second time and try to come up with something that you can use in your daily life, you know? And I was like, hey, wow. Yeah, are you calling me unspiritual? You know? And yeah, she said, no, but here's the thing, you have to be able to use it. So, you know, what I wound up doing, she asked me to collect evidence, right? Like the little research scientist that I am. She said, I want you to collect evidence. Here's your notebook. Every time something happens and you absolutely feel in the whole of your being that something loves you, could you write it down? Because you're not going to be able to turn it over until you've got the evidence, yeah? So I collected evidence. That was really, really helpful to me. The other thing that was very helpful to me is I wrote a very long resentment letter to God. Dear God, you know, you did this, you know, what is this? You know, really got it out, which I have kept and I will keep forever. Because it's like, you know, whatever the injured partner took, you know, I needed to get that out of the way. Step three nearly did me in. I'm supposed to turn my will and my life over to the, you know, to something that has, I didn't get it. It was a rocky point, and I'll tell you the truth, it was right about then I had a little bit of a slip. I had to go back and start again at step one. Couldn't imagine turning it over because it's like, what does that mean? I don't know, I didn't get it. Started over again. Yes, I'm an addict. Yes, you know, got a higher power. And whatever, it's one of the ones that's taken me a long time to understand. I think it basically means that, you know, when I'm scared and I don't know what to do, I ask God to hold my hand and give me direction, and that pretty much works for me. It's gotten simpler over time, I should say. Step four, didn't have a problem. I wasn't scared to look. What was really, really important to me is my story was so dry. It was like the dry, parched desert, you know. My mother, my father, you know. My treatment, you know. The death, everything. It was like, I sound like I'm doing the 10 plagues. You know, death, vermin, you know, whatever. It was so dry. There was no juice. There was no life. And there was none of me in it, you know, like a... My original asset list was four times longer than the list of my defects. That is a mark of how strongly I needed to have everybody think I was okay. Anyway, managed to get through that. Step five was beautiful. You know, it was very beautiful to sit with somebody who held my hand while I cried, probably the first time. That was one other, never in how many therapies my parents bought me, never in the therapies of the treatment, never the group, nothing. I sat with my hands, you know, two hands, we had to hold hands like this. Six and seven, well, they're a work in progress. What can I tell you? When I'm scared, if you scare me, you know, and I'm not connected, then I'm, well... I don't like anybody or anything. I don't think anything's pretty, and I'm really sad again. Eight and nine, well, I made a list. I wrote down all the people I'd harmed, including myself. It didn't, you know, just made the list, didn't do anything more than that. The amends for me, I have to say, have been pretty easy. My father told me recently that our slate was clean, which is, you know, for which I am incredibly grateful. My brother is in the rooms now. I'm going to go see him soon. Haven't had a chance to do it with my stepmother, but I'm very slowly gaining willingness. I did put her on the list. So, yeah. Let me just check my time here. 22. I was worried I was going to run out of things to say. Step 10, I have found a challenge. I won't lie. I like to take a bath before bed and read a mystery novel in the bathtub, and I don't want to get worked up by writing down what I might have done wrong. You know? Because when I think I've done a bad job, and then I feel really bad, you know, I'm like all worked up. I feel sad and lonely and introverted, you know? So one of the things that's been most important for me as I go along this journey is learning how to look at my life, you know? I think because, well, you know, possibly it was because of all the therapy, I had these, like, I call them my pathology glasses, where I'm, like, always looking for the fissures, always looking for the cracks. What's wrong? What's wrong? What's poisonous? You know, what's bad? What's bad? Where did it come from? And I'm trying to learn not to ask why so much, and I'm trying to learn how to walk around looking at things with softer lenses. Maybe not the rose-colored ones that made my asset list so long, but, you know, the ones that are more gentle, you know, where it's like, yeah, that's okay, because you, my friend, and that's me, yeah, I am my friend, you, my friend, are unskilled, yeah? I haven't been living clean, you know, I used for 30 years. I'm much older than I look. I'm really just developing my skills. So necessarily, sometimes I go astray. You know, I'm periodically wrong-footed. So for step 10, what I'm learning to do is to say, yep, you behaved unskillfully. It is distinctly possible that next time you could do that differently. And then leave it at that, you know? And I think that, for me, that goes back to this thing about the trees who whisper, I love you. You know, basically, I think I'm okay, you know? I think I'm pretty okay. I've got an excellent team. You know, I've got my higher power, who's magnificent. I've got the world's most gorgeous sponsor. And I have a beautiful family I now know how to love. So it's pretty much okay if I look gently, work in progress. Step 11, I felt like I was getting married. I swear to God. No, really. I was like the bride at the wedding. When I got put on step 11, it was like going, you know, like I'd gotten all clean. It was like the night before, and I'm all dressed in white, and I'm ready finally to, you know, come as I am. And, yeah, funny. No. You know, I'm out as being a spiritual person. I just want to say that now. I'm so out about it. I am a spiritual cookie. I was so excited about the opportunity to work on this relationship that I'd been in for such a long time and that carried me for such a long time. Really, really, so excited about it. And it was beautiful because it was like, how can I deepen my relationship, the most beautiful relationship? You know, what do I need to do in order to do that? I'm not the world's best meditator. You know, I go in fits and spurts. I'm a very good prayer all the time. And get creative too. You know, I like to write my own prayers based on what I'm feeling and what I'm needing. You know, I take a lot of liberty in that relationship. You know, I figure like, you know, my power's my mate, you know, or, you know, it took the time to carry me over the waters. So I figure I can get creative in writing my prayers, and I do. But basically, I try to behave like God in all life matters. And I try to be present, and I try to be clear-eyed. And for me, I try not to be afraid to be the spiritual cookie that I am. And step 12, carry the message. Well, crikey, here I am. I was terrified before I came here. And I thought, you know, it doesn't matter what you feel like because, you know, your entire life was changed as a result of this process. And, you know, gosh, if one person here had another clean day, well, you know, I'd be so grateful. I don't, you know, even if I don't know you, it's like I'd be just really delighted. So I do the things that you're asked to do. You know, I do a lot of service. But I will say this, I've done a lot of service from the first day I walked in the door. Not only did service keep me clean, but when I did my first commitment, which was with my mate, who turned into my best friend at the helpline, it was the very first time in many, many years that I experienced myself as a good worker and as achieving something. You know, I had skills, I could help, and it made me feel so good. And like, you know, it really did. And it was the first thing probably that led me on the road back to going to work. You know, it taught me that, okay, so, you know, I had stolen and robbed and forgot to come in and taken drugs and everything like that. But, you know, with a new turn, it's possible that I could, in fact, go back out in the world and be of service. So I've done that right from the beginning. Not just service keeps me clean, but service is the ultimate expression for me of my gratitude that, you know, I went from being really sad and lonely to being glad to be alive. And in the last 2 years, I started my master's, and I've gone back into teaching, and I teach lots of kids in inner city schools, most of whom are going through a really difficult time, you know? And it turns out I have the knack. Not sure if I have the knack in teaching, but what I do, when I sit down across from another being, I am who I say I am, yeah? It's not all good, it's not all bad. But you know what, there's a real lack of that for children. And, you know, I used to look at the therapist, whatever, I used to look at the people around me when I was little, and I'd be like, you know, you're saying you're this person, but you are not. You know, you say you're like this, and it's like my big bugbear, you know, nobody's authentic. So my job is serve. It turns out, you know, I have been called to serve after all that time. You know, I have been called to serve. I'm a teacher, getting my master's, even considering getting my PhD. You know, I thank God every day that I didn't lose some of the brain cells that I have. It could have gone either way, you know. But so I am so grateful. You know, I'm grateful that all of you are here. I'm grateful that I'm clean. I'm grateful that my kids are growing up with a mom. Now they're growing up with somebody who is there, and they come home and they're all freaked out, and I'm like, you know what? It's all going to be okay. I'm glad that I can teach them that, you know, my strength as a mother is limited, and pretty soon they're going to have to shift and get something, you know, because your mom is like, you know, that someday, not far from now, because one is 12 and one is 14, they're going to need to draw on that strength too. And, you know, I wish that for them. I'm grateful that I'm a good wife, you know. My husband's a great guy. While we've been together over 20 years, he put up with a lot of stuff. I'm grateful that the person next to me said that I could hold their hand. How am I doing? Oh, no! I'm running out. I may have to take a pause. Excuse me. Know everything. Do you know? And one of the best things that has happened to me in recovery is that my higher power's will for me is bigger than what I can imagine for myself. I am constantly surprised. Do you know? I will ask for just the littlest thing, and something so much more amazing will happen. I didn't know how limited my vision for my life could be until I came into these rooms, do you know? I didn't want to be lonely. I knew that. I didn't want to be my mom. I knew that. I knew I wanted to be of service, but I didn't really know what else was on offer for me. And back to that thing about step 11, learning how to listen for the signs of which way to walk has been critically important for me. As my life grows and opens out, it seems like there are so many choices now that I have to make. You know, not just, well, no, I'm not going to say not just. Like, who are my friends supposed to be? You know, and how am I supposed to behave at work? And what, you know, I've just started and there's all these different things that are coming to me. Like, which one is the one that I'm supposed to choose? You know? I don't really know. And this process of learning to listen, well, it started in meetings and listening to other people, but like learning to listen to what is good for me and what is right for me is really important in my life right now. And what's happening is that I'm finding that sometimes I knock on a door and the door doesn't open. And if I stand there and pound on the door, I'm just going to have bleeding hands. But every now and again, I go like this and I tap on the door and it flies open and little butterflies come out. And I go, oh, you know, door number two, that must be the one that you go down. And I walk down that road. And I swear to you, I have no idea what's going to happen to me in the future. You know, I used to know exactly what was going to happen to me. If I took this, I was going to go up. If I took this, I was going to go down. If I stole this, I was going to get what I wanted, you know. And I don't really know what's going to happen. But I have absolute and complete trust in this process. So, if you're new, you know, what can I tell you? I wish for you, you know, the possibility every now and again of having real joy. I wish for you a clean day today, you know, good luck maybe tomorrow too. But one thing that I really loved having since I came into these rooms is friends, you know. I wish for anybody who's new that they can take the time to imagine that this room full of funny strangers could learn to be their friends. I loved addicts when I was using. That's actually who I wanted to hang out with all the time. And I didn't know when I first came in and I looked at everybody and they looked different and they didn't look like, I don't know, just, well, I'm not even from here, you know, I didn't really know what anybody was supposed to look like, but, you know, I never entertained the possibility that the people in these rooms were going to become my heart friends. Never for a second. You know, my friends were these people, and they look like this, and they did this. And, oh, man, having friends has been really hard work learning how to do it. You know, really super hard. My feelings are hurt pretty easily, and I have a hard time picking up the phone still sometimes. And, I'm worried you won't like me, basically. I mean, I'm worried that, whatever. Even if I like myself and God likes me too, I sometimes worry that you won't. And so I can be very protective. This is the longest time I've ever talked in my entire life. Okay? I'm like, I can get up in front of a bunch of kids and talk forever. But, to be this self-revealing from having, hid under a coat or been fake, it's so hard. But you can't do this alone. It's impossible. Forget just the loneliness. I need, it takes, how does that go? It takes a village to raise a child. It takes a fellowship to help an addict get and stay clean. When I first came, the first couple of years, I didn't take a phone number. I'm still not the girl you're likely to see having a cup of coffee after either, But in my service gigs and when I've joined committees, I've slowly made friends. I can count about 10 people here that I actually know, And sure enough, there's actually somebody sitting at the table who's on one of the committees with me. Slowly, really shyly, my world is opening out, and I have people who will help me, So it's not just the one person holding my hand, and it's not just my higher power holding my hand, but this, whole sea, this whole group of people, all the same people that I liked when I was using, but now together, doing something different. If you're new, man, there just could be so much ahead of you if you do the one thing they say in the beginning, hey, if you keep coming back. So it's been an honor and a privilege to speak here this evening. I'm not going to hit my 40 directly. However, I don't want to waffle either. So thank you very much indeed. Thanks.